There is more to me, Queen Eliara of Elfgard, than my elven magic. Just as there's more to Geico than saving you money, Geico also gives you 24/7 access to licensed agents online, on the phone, or on the Geico app. And while I am a mighty elf queen, I am also a mighty big fan of barbecue potato chips. Minions! More smoky mesquite!
Geico. Expect great savings and a whole lot more.
You are listening to the Mavs Fanatic Podcast.
We'll all be waiting for next time of Mavs Fanatic. Even if you have that cube of money.
Welcome to the Mavs Fanatic Podcast.
Yo.
I'm Nick Angstead, writer of Mavs Fanatic. Got Taman Turner, of course, with us.
Yay.
We got a great show for you today. We got Coach Dave of the B-Ball Breakdown Podcast going to be joining us. So
yeah, it's going to be a lot of fun with that.
It's going to be good, so enjoy.
Have fun.
All right, welcome to On the Phone Right Now of Basketball Breakdown and That Guy Basketball Podcast. We got Coach Dave. Coach Dave, how you doing, man?
I'm doing well, man. How's it going?
It is great. I met Coach Dave this summer at the Sports Business Classroom in Las Vegas. We were hanging out with Larry Kuhn and Nate Duncan and Adam Silver, just some names.
Big Shot.
Just some names.
Big Shot.
What a name dropper.
Yeah, he calls me Big Shot. He's the one who's got all the names.
That was just,
well, he dropped my name first. So.
See, there you go.
It was an awesome opportunity, and it's great to just meet guys that are trying to make it and trying to, make their name in this business, and Coach Dave is one of those, and he is doing some great stuff with B-Ball Breakdown. How's Coach Nick?
He's doing well, man. Like, we're having a really good time. We've started doing these live shows. We've got our weekly podcast that we do on his podcast. And, we're having a great time. Like, he and I just have good chemistry. We kind of think about the game in a similar way. And the few things that we will disagree on actually have made for some of the best, like, podcast moments that we've had, because you can see us going back and forth. And I think that's a lot of fun.
This podcast is notorious for having us disagree on things.
Yeah, I'm usually always right, and Nick is usually always wrong. It's usually how it works.
This whole year, Taman has been on Team Tank for the Mavericks. I have been on Team Let's Make the Playoffs. Let's be a respectable team. And Coach Dave, which side would you be on if you were the Mavericks, either if you were Mark Cuban or Donnie Nelson or Rick Carlisle? What side would you be on?
Before you answer, Coach, there's only one right answer, and my answer is the right answer. But go ahead.
I'm on Team Dirk. I say you go to Dirk and you ask him what he wants to
yes.
do.
Yes, Dirk doesn't want
to
take.
After 18 years, I think you owe it to that guy. He's taken so many, pay breaks and given the Mavericks so much.
Everything.
And I think that you got to kind of ask him, hey, how do you feel about bottoming out? Like, let's take it easy for a year and do some rest and rehab, and I thought they were going to actually do that when the Achilles stuff started acting up. And then he's come back and, been like Frankenstein's monster out there. If there was no Dirk, I mean, you obviously tank. Obviously tank.
Right.
Because, what do they need? They need a top flight point guard. And what is this draft full of? Top flight point guards. So, I think they've got a potential foundational star in Harrison Barnes. I know that's probably a little bit controversial, but I think Harrison Barnes has that ability. He's a 20-point-a-game scorer, and I think that you need to start thinking about building around him.
Let me ask you a question real quick, Coach, because I love your answer of Team Dirk. That was a very good answer. My only thing is that I think Dirk knows, even if this team makes the playoffs, and I know you have to go out there and play the game. Dirk's a very competitive guy, probably one of the most competitive guys you'll ever meet. But the Mavericks aren't beating the Warriors in the first round. That's not going to happen. So it's like, where is this team going?
You don't believe in the 10-year anniversary of the 8-1?
If that happens,
Mavericks Warriors.
If that happens, I will literally buy you dinner at Del Frisco's in downtown Dallas.
I'm down. We're shaking on it right now.
We're shaking on it.
Literally shaking on
it. The Mavericks beat the Warriors, I will buy Nick Del Frisco's dinner in downtown Dallas.
Yeah, I don't think that's going to happen. Honestly, what I would do, and you know how close Mark Cuban and Dirk are. I would, if I was Cuban, I would say, hey, Dirk, do you want to work out a buyout and then you could go sign a minimum deal with the Warriors and get a ring, get another ring, and also just play some fun basketball for a few months and then come back to us this summer? Actually, wait, are the rules against that? Are you allowed to buy a guy out?
Probably, but if I like your plan in a way, but I actually hate it because I'm a Mavericks fan, but if they were to do that, they probably would do it under the table.
Right. You'd have to work something out.
Right.
But, you know, this is not a team. I don't think that they're going to actually make the playoffs this year. I don't think they're going to be the eighth seed, which means by winning all these games that they've been winning recently, thanks to Yogi Ferrell and Dirk, I think that they're actually just hurting their draft position. I would have definitely pulled the plug on this early, barring Dirk, right? Like, Dirk is the kind of outlier in my decision-making on this process.
Like, I knew I liked the coach.
Any other team, any other guy, oh, man, I'm tanking all day.
I knew I liked you, Coach. I knew you were a good guy. When Nick told me we got you, I was like, I knew I liked you.
Just another amateur GM.
Oh, my gosh, stop. There's a story behind
the GM project for B-Ball Breakdown, and it was really interesting because it was 30 guys, you know, working each team going up to the trade deadline. And I didn't care what team I had. You know, like, I'm not a homer for anybody. And I really, you know, I feel like I have a good handle on the league and every team. So I was assigned to Miami Heat. And my first thought was, and this was right at the start of this 9-game winning streak, or I think they had won like 3. And I was like, oh, well, the Heat are bad. They don't have a foundational superstar. We got to tank. And so my first trade was I sent Hassan Whiteside to Dallas.
Ooh,
we would have liked that.
Because I knew whoever had Dallas wouldn't want to tank. So I sent him there. I got Justin Anderson and a first-round pick because all I needed to do, I want max cap space.
And that is an incredible trade for the Mavericks.
Miami can get free agents, right? Like, my whole plan is I want to be able to throw a max deal at Kevin Durant and say, hey, look, we also have these prospects, and we can sign 2 other guys. So Dallas, though, historically hasn't been great at getting free agents. So they kind of got to think about this, you know, more like the Hinkie plan, and they've got to get some young assets somehow. They've held on to Darren Williams for this long for some reason. I don't know. For some reason, Bogut's still on the team. I'm assuming both of those guys are gone by the trade deadline. So, yeah, I would definitely go full-blown tank. I don't think that this team is good. They're fun to watch. I mean, that game last night was so much fun.
Gosh.
But I don't know. Is this podcast evergreen? Am I like, should I say which game I'm talking about?
No. We'll post this tonight.
Yes.
Okay, good. So, yeah, the Portland game last night was so much fun. And, but they're not good. But neither is Portland. So, like, Portland should be tanking as well.
Ooh, man, that'd be so hard to have a superstar like Damian Lillard be tanking.
Yeah, it's very hard. I mean, McCollum and Damian Lillard. Absolutely.
I think he is.
CJ McCollum better than Damian Lillard?
I personally don't think so.
Do you want to pull up the numbers and go watch some game film before you answer that question?
Because you are challenging us, it sounds like we might need to do that.
I think that CJ McCollum – now, look, this is all this year, right? You go year to year on all these things. I think CJ McCollum is having a much better season, and I think that CJ McCollum – I think his game, his ability to get a shot that's not just a deep three has made him – more dangerous than Damian Lillard. And not to mention CJ shooting like 42% on threes this year. So,
and we saw exactly that last night when with 3 seconds left, he gets a layup basically at the rim. I mean, he goes right into the paint and he gets a little floater off, and that just his ability to, you know, to get a shot like that is what you're talking about.
He's so fast with the basketball. It is something, man. Like, he's fast and under control. It's like Russell Westbrook level of speed with the basketball. And honestly, man, if I was the Mavs, I would be calling and asking about Dame. I just don't know that you guys have anything to give up. You know, kudos to Carlisle for having a team almost in the playoffs again with nobody who can play basketball. You know, like signing guys out of the D League.
How dare you?
Contracts.
How dare you? You take that back. Harrison Barnes is a good basketball player. Wes Matthews is a good basketball
player. Harrison Barnes is good.
And Yogi Ferrell –
Yogi.
He's a great basketball
Yogi.
Player. Yogi Ferrell is so good.
I know we're going to talk a lot about Yogi, but can we talk first about the best contract in the NBA?
Seth Curry, man.
Seth.
So
that
good.
Guy is fantastic. Like, that's your point guard of the future.
He's a very good player.
The only issue with that is when they've played really well, they've played him off the ball. And I haven't seen any real success, like measurable success, when he's playing point guard. Not that it can't happen. We just haven't seen
it
yet.
I have to agree with Nick there. I like Seth
weird.
A lot.
Stop agreeing with me.
I know, right? Like, Coach, hey, if you're going to come on this podcast, you can't make Nick and I agree. But I like Seth a lot. But, like, kind of like what Nick said. I mean,
so you see him as a point guard.
Yeah.
Well, look, I mean, you know, I believe that the future of basketball is positionless basketball. And I think that,
I agree with that,
you know, all the good teams, if you look at, like, the Warriors, I mean, Steph Curry is, quote-unquote, the point guard. But really, Draymond Green is the point guard, right?
And so is Kevin Durant, you know?
I see Steph Curry as the
offense. And so, you know, like I think Steph is averaging, like, less than 6 assists a game, which people bring up as lack of playmaking.
Yeah.
And so I think that we need to throw out all of this traditional thought. And basically, it's about who you defend. So Seth Curry is 6'2", 185, so he's a 1, right? He's going to defend the other team's smallest guard.
Yeah.
But that's more where I'm coming from. Like, I don't know if he needs to be your primary ball handler, but on that team, as it's currently constructed, I think he might be their best creator. Would you disagree?
Yeah, I mean, well, for saying everybody's healthy, J.J. Barea is still up there. He's still pretty good when he's on the floor.
Yeah, I always forget about Barea.
And people do.
He's a forgettable player for me.
And people do all the time. But when he comes back, they're like, oh, look, a play.
JJ, look, some dribble drive action.
Wow. Some driving kick.
If I was coaching against Dallas in the playoffs, I would not want to coach against J.J. Barea.
He's a pest, but in a good way for Mavericks fans.
So, yeah. So, as far as, like, I'm really, really curious why you want to go for the playoffs. Like, even though you know, like, long term, it's a bad play. I know you know this.
It's a good question. Answer that, Nick.
Oh, man. I've done this so many times in this podcast. But I think that there are ways to. There are ways to acquire elite talent. And I think one of those ways is to do it like the 76ers and the Lakers have been doing. They bought them out, you know, they grab these, you know, these players, but those teams have had such luck in the lottery. They've had such luck in grabbing players. I mean, the sample size for the Philadelphia 76ers draft pick, they had to get a Nerlens Noel. They had to get a Jahlil Okafor before they got a Joel Embiid. They had to, like, get all those guys before they were able to get that. If the Mavericks are going to bottom out and they're expecting this one draft pick that might be in the top five or might end up being, like, number 6 or number 7, and they need to nail that draft pick to set up the rest of their franchise, basically, for the next 10 years, then the odds are so slim that guy's going to end up being a franchise-changing player that I think you do it the way that the mid-2000s Rockets did, where you stay kind of in this area where you are in the 500 range. You maybe make the playoffs a couple years. You got the Trevor Ariza, Luis Scola kind of team where they're fine, you know, they're okay. But then eventually they're able to get pieces together to trade for, you know, a disgruntled star or trade for a budding superstar like a James Harden.
Okay, so
go ahead and tell him he's wrong,
are you
coach.
Willing to be bad to mediocre.
Man, see, You'd have to.
The problem is this new CBA. The new CBA with the DVPE, where basically they can give these guys these supermax contracts.
Yeah,
means
the
we're going to
six-year
see
deal.
Fewer Kevin Durant leaving their teams.
True.
And Kevin Durant is a franchise-changing free agent. So I'm looking at the top 10 free agents this year. You got Steph Curry staying. Kevin Durant staying.
Probably.
Blake Griffin. Staying, and I don't even know why he's on that list ahead of Chris Paul, but Chris Paul's also staying.
Just because he's younger.
Kyle Lowry, staying. Paul Millsap is an option, but Paul Millsap doesn't really work with Harrison Barnes.
And he doesn't change a franchise, I don't think. I mean, he's not a transformational player where he's going to...
That's right. Gordon Hayward, he's staying or he's going to Boston. Dwayne Wade, I don't even need to say anything. J.J. Redick, he's old. Andre Iguodala, also old, doesn't change your franchise. So you're saying that you're down with just being bad next year too?
So you can go through that list of free agents, but you could also go through the list of the players that were drafted the last couple of years and go, okay, look, for every really good player that was drafted in the top five, there's a Hashim Thabeet, there's a Kwame Brown, there, you know, there's some type of player, there's a Wes Johnson, there's a player like that where the probability
of the last 5 years, but.
Wait, let me interrupt you for a second, because I'm kind of annoyed that Nick brought that up. But the thing is that let's say the Mavericks get the, you know, they're in the lottery and they get the 12th or 13th pick. That means they've done nothing. They've absolutely have done nothing.
But like, you have probably
you missed the playoffs and you get nothing for a draft
player there. Where we've seen Paul George come out of that range, we've seen Kawhi Leonard come out of that range, Miles Turner come out of that range. I mean, there's been good players come out of that range.
Do you believe that the Mavericks will
and
get a
Dallas
good player?
Has drafted fairly well.
Yeah, that too.
Right. So we want to trust Dallas's drafting ability too. That's what I don't understand about this team tank thing. Is like, oh, we need to get a better. A draft pick. What are we done with draft?
Okay.
Pick?
Okay. Time out. Let me
your
respond to that.
Difficulty with draft picks goes down the closer you get to number one. It gets easier to draft. Like, I mean, if you're drafting top seven, it's much easier to get a guy who's going to be good than if you're drafting down at 15.
You tell that to the 2013 Cleveland Cavaliers who took Anthony Bennett at number one. Tell that to them. We could end up with Anthony Bennett on this Mavericks team.
You know, I think when you get a guy like Anthony Bennett, I think it's front offices like not quite doing their homework scouting. I think it's you know, the scouting services, Chad Ford, guys like that, I think that they influence these guys a little too much.
Yeah, I agree.
And they're better now. Like, teams are better at it now than they were 4 years ago when Bennett was drafted.
I sure hope so, man. but you say that, and then a guy like Yogi Ferrell goes undrafted, and a guy like Dorian Finney-Smith goes undrafted, where these guys would probably go in the first round if you had the knowledge that you have now. Wouldn't you think?
Yes, but are they making an impact? Like, do you see them in 4 years winning you a playoff series?
Nope.
I don't know.
No, he knows
the answer.
I would like to. he really, really wants them to, so in 4 years he can come back to this very day and be like, see, I told you so.
We don't even talk anymore.
This is also a unique season, right? Like, this year, you've got the Warriors that are really just bulldozing everyone.
Yep.
And the Spurs are somehow still good.
Man.
And the Rockets are really great. Okay, so there's your top three. One of those three is going to the finals probably with the Warriors, and
yeah,
the Warriors are probably gonna win.
You can cross out the Rockets. The Rockets aren't going anywhere.
I think they're gonna give us a fun 7-game series.
I believe that, but because they play no defense and a Mike D'Antoni team doesn't even know what defense looks like, I don't see them doing it all. To me, this is the Suns of the 2010s. Not exactly the same roster, not exactly the same go, but the same mindset is there.
Now wait, why do you say they don't play defense?
Because
he doesn't watch their games. He doesn't know.
No, I don't watch their games consistently because they're not on here. But I know Mike D'Antoni. Mike D'Antoni is not a defensive-minded coach.
Get him, Coach Dave.
I'm about to blow your mind.
Get him, Coach Dave.
Yeah, Nick, you should have warned him ahead of time. All right, listen. So, first of all, Houston is second in net rating, right? Okay. So 6.16. They're behind the Warriors. They're about league average in defense. In the defensive rating, and they're second in offensive rating, right? That's a 55 win team.
Yep.
So historically, so if you look at the pieces that D'Antoni has been given since Phoenix and up to now, outside of Patrick Beverley, Trevor Ariza, I guess, is above average defender. Although I think at this point it's reputation. And then Rajah Bell back in the day. Name me one guy that could play defense. Now, Capella is coming around. He's getting better. But I think it's really impressive what D'Antoni is able to do with guys that are average at best on defense. And as a matter of fact, James Harden has been really good this year on defense. So, the whole D'Antoni doesn't coach defense thing, I just can't wrap my head around.
Well, did he have
he has a bad rap. The bad rap on D'Antoni comes from when people didn't understand pace. Because they would see these scores and the Suns would put up 125 and they'd give up 115. But, like, the reason is that they play at such a fast pace, you've got so many more possessions. So if you look at it on the per 100 possessions kind of level, you get a more clear picture. Does that make sense?
Yeah, he had Tyson Chandler in New York for a year, but other than that, yeah.
Yes, yeah, for that one season. Yeah, and they were actually – those New York teams are really interesting for me.
Oh, gosh, don't
start – glad you brought that up.
Don't start on New York, please. No, we do this every week.
Nick knows. Nick knows that any – the New York Knicks are a comedy show. They are a tragedy to sports. I guarantee you – just having you noticed with the Knicks pretty much my entire life, and I'm 25 years old
–
that. Every single time, there's always a bizarre story that comes out of New York. Am I right?
Yeah. Well, dude, come on, man. Like, New York is the capital of the world, and especially for the media and the sports media as well. I mean, you know, like, how many teams are there, right? And I think
quite a lot.
What you've got is James Dolan doesn't like it when the Knicks aren't on the front page.
Recently, this whole Phil Jackson thing.
This is all a ploy because he wants Carmelo to waive his no trade clause so that he can get him out of town.
Yeah, he's trying to.
Meanwhile, Phil Jackson also signed him to this stupid contract with the no trade clause.
And there lies the story of Phil Jackson doing his zenniest to try to keep Carmelo and get rid of him. Look like he's trying to keep him, but also get rid of him at the same time.
Right, or the opposite. But Phil Jackson's ruining his reputation, man. What free agent's going to want to go sign in New York while Phil Jackson's still employed there? Because how long until Phil Jackson changes his mind about this guy?
You are preaching to the choir. I have been saying this about not only Phil Jackson, but just the Knicks in general since I was about 12.
Oh, man. Taman used to live in New York.
Well, I mean, just think about it. Like, Carmelo has been nothing but classy about this whole thing, man.
Agreed.
And I hope more people will realize this. And you know what? If I was Dallas, I would see what you could get Melo for.
Yeah,
absolutely.
Because if they're accepting this rumored Clippers offer of not DeAndre Jordan, not Chris Paul, not Blake Griffin, like if they just want the other stuff, we got other stuff. We got other stuff.
Justin Anderson for Melo.
We got tons of other stuff.
We do.
Yeah, right.
We have lots of other stuff.
Yeah.
By the way, Coach, I have to thank you for bringing up the Knicks because at this point, I don't even have to bring up New York anymore. Every time we have a guest, it seems like they always do it for me.
Every guest brings up the Knicks. It's so funny.
Well, you know, they're
they're an interesting bunch.
Probably not. I'll keep it clean.
They're an interesting bunch.
We play them twice a year. I don't understand. This is a Mavericks podcast that we play them twice a year, and somehow we brought them up every single week.
It's because, again, man, like they are attention whores.
Yeah, they're very bizarre.
Help but be, you know, like on the front page or the back page or whatever, and they just have to, you know, be the center of attention. And meanwhile, like Melo is being quiet, which I think is, you know, speaks volumes, right? Like the guy has wanted to be in New York. He, you know, he kind of forced a trade to get to New York. And I got a lot of respect for the way he's handled this whole thing.
Yeah, completely. He has handled it really, really well. You know who else has handled stardom really, really well that is sort of related to Carmelo? Because Yogi Mania, which I think we need to come up with a new name other than Yogi Mania. I posted that last night on Twitter. Just something other than Yogi Mania. But Yogi Ferrell has had an amazing week in the NBA. He's signed a two-year deal now. He has had that 9-for-11 game from three against the Trailblazers the other night. Coach, have we seen anything like Yogi Mania? Maybe a former teammate of Carmelo's?
Well, I mean, of course. You know, like Jeremy Lin is the first guy that comes to mind. You know, getting signed, right. Getting kind of bounced around the league for a little while, then being signed. And, you know, Brooklyn really missed on Yogi Ferrell. I mean, he was there this season on a 10-day.
They cut him twice.
Very similar. But really, like, he has the Portland Trailblazers to thank for this. I mean, he was playing really well, but he didn't have a breakout game until he played them, and they went under on every single three that he shot. And how many did he hit in that game?
Nine of 11.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, Nick, I'm pretty sure that if you were wide open from three, you could at least go 9 of 15.
Oh, man, that is so much faith in me that you should not have.
Well, but here's what I'm saying. It's like, you might not be a good three-point shooter, but you can hit an open shot. Yogi Ferrell is a 40%. He was shooting 40% in the D-League this year. This guy can shoot. He can stroke it. And they just kept going underneath. You know, that's bad coaching. And Stotch, I'm sure, was not happy with himself after that game.
And when you look at that lineup that he had, that 32-point game that we're talking about, it was Damian Lillard, CJ McCollum, Evan Turner, Noah Vonleh, and Mason Plumlee. You're like, you look at that lineup and just go, man, that's not that impressive.
Right.
That you score that many against.
No, you got to start. If you're a scorer, you're probably salivating because there's not a single good defender in that lineup.
No,
not at all.
No, not at all. But a breakout game, I think that Cleveland versus Dallas game where Dallas beat the Cavs, and
I don't know if that was his breakout.
Yogi scored 19. I know. And Kyrie scored 18.
I told you that. No, I know that. I mean, he was really good.
Yeah.
But the Portland on national stage, that was an ESPN game. He just showed off, and I know that it even went good. But who would have thought an undrafted rookie who was in, as Rick Carlisle put it, in Long Island or Erie, 2 weeks ago, to come in and go on national TV and score 32 points and shoot 9 for 12 three-point line. I know he's a good three-point shooter, but nobody saw that coming. That was his breakout story.
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. And he made superstar Damian Lillard an afterthought.
Right.
So Kevin Pelton tweeted this last night, and I retweeted it and just said, shh, Kevin, shush, that Yogi Ferrell's actually shooting 30% from three if you take out that Portland game.
Yeah, be quiet.
Yes.
Be quiet,
dude. Take out that Portland game. It doesn't work that way.
No, it doesn't. It really doesn't.
Right?
Now, here's the thing. He played 10 games in Brooklyn. I just pulled up his stats because I was curious. He played 10 games in Brooklyn, and he shot 30% there. And so I guess, he's shooting 30% for Dallas if you pull out that game, too. But his numbers in the D-League suggest otherwise, and he was a good shooter in college. I think that he's a good shooter.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
But think about, like, the minutes and stuff like that he was playing in Brooklyn. They weren't consistent. Now, he in Dallas, because it's Dallas and he's a point guard, he's starting.
Yes.
I mean, that's the one good thing about Dallas. Rick Carlisle, if you're a point guard and you're on the roster, you are starting at some point.
True.
He said to ESPN the other day that the first day in practice, coach comes up to him and says, you're starting tomorrow. Man.
Dude, I love that, man.
Gosh.
I love that.
It's great. I mean, I just love that he's able to step in and he can, he can just take over a game if you need him to every once in a while, which, I mean, hopefully we'll get to a point where we don't need him to. But what do you think makes Yogi so good? Is it just the shooting, or are you seeing anything else for him?
Well, he's got good quickness, and then underrated is his defense. Like, he actually is high effort.
He last gave Kyrie fits against the Cavs
that
last
CJ
week.
Go ahead. He was actually trying to draw an offensive foul because he was just barely beat on the play. But he's got pretty good feet. I think he's sort of in the mold of J.J. Barea as far as like that quickness goes.
I'd agree
with
that.
He would be a guy who would be a pain in the butt to guard, but without the creation, or at least I haven't seen the playmaking from him. But it looks like, what is he? He's averaging 4.5 assists a game, which again, you don't know like what that means.
Yeah, that's not the whole story, but at least he's not, one assist where you're like, okay, he just isn't going to pass. But
yeah, he's not a black hole, which is great. I mean, I don't think he'd be playing if he was. But I just think he's he's one of those guys Carlisle is going to love. He's in great shape.
Yeah.
So his stamina is fantastic, and he's a gamer. So, I think that's what makes him good. It's kind of like guts, which I hate to use because you can't really quantify it, but it's a real thing. I mean, J.J. Barea made a career out of that.
Is Yogi is this the best story so far in the NBA this year? Not what I mean with the Warriors and Cavs, but best individual story.
Best feel-good story.
I mean, I say that because this guy literally became a millionaire in 10 days.
Yeah, I mean, that's great, but, like, I think that, I mean, he's young, right? Like, he's 23, and he's obviously talented.
Right.
So I think he was going to find a job somewhere.
Well, tell that to Brooklyn.
Well, I mean, but again, he was on an NBA roster, right? Like, there's only 450 of those jobs out there, and he was one of 450 at one point. So it's not that crazy. I think, for me, the best story is probably JaVale McGee.
Ooh.
Because he's a guy
former
that
Maverick.
Has been called a head case. Never, no one's ever called him a bad guy, which you know, you can tell. Like, his teammates really do have affection for him. And you can never say that he's, like, doesn't play hard. It's just boneheaded mistakes, and they were just so huge that that's all you ever saw. And, you know, he's probably going to wind up with a ring, and he's actually contributing. I think that that's a big deal. I mean, he's there on a veteran minimum deal. That's kind of big for me. I tend to look at the veteran guys for feel-good stories rather than, you know, I mean, again, he's young, he's talented. He'll probably be in the league for a few years. I mean, he did just sign a two-year deal. That's fantastic. I love that.
Yeah, completely.
Kudos to Mark Cuban for that, by the way.
Hey, how about
that? You know what? We like him. Let's stick with him instead of just riding out 10 days until he gets hurt.
So this is a question that we got on Twitter a couple times, was why wasn't there a bidding war for Yogi Ferrell? Do you know anything about the, you know, the 10-day contracts, or if you have to sign with your team that you end a 10-day contract with, or do you think that, you know, there could have been other teams that could have offered him some, you know, some money or something that was more than the minimum or whatever the Mavericks offered him?
You know what? In my CBA knowledge, the 10-day contract is almost like it's like a blind spot for me. But I'm pretty sure if you're on a 10-day with a team that they get the negotiating rights. And I think that there's like a waiver process after the 10-day contract. So, and plus, I mean, look, man, if you're a player on a 10-day deal, and the team you're with offers you a contract, you're going to sign it.
Yeah, right.
Because it's guaranteed money. You don't want to take the risk, for sure. And now the question is sort of like one I asked the other day. You know, Coach Nick and I talked about this. You know, Breontay Weber just signed with the Warriors.
Yeah.
So Breontay Weber is a guy that the Cavs could use. Yogi Ferrell is a guy that the Cavs could use. Why didn't other teams who have been vocal about their need for a playmaker at the guard position, why didn't they recognize Yogi Ferrell, you know, 2 weeks ago before Dallas snagged him? That's a better question for me.
Sometimes you just get a steal. I mean, this happens in sports at times. I mean, it happens.
Well, and there's so many guys, right?
Like, right.
There's so many guys out there between Europe and in the D League and in college, like, you're going to have these little blind spots, but this just seems, especially for the Cavs, very egregious because you missed out on like three guys who were in the D League that just signed 10-day deals. So,
and you also,
I don't know. I just like to poke the Cavs fans whenever I can because they get really
fair,
testy about it.
Very fair.
And plus, also, you have to find players that fit your team or fit your system. You don't always want to just go for any guy. They might play well at a particular thing, but if it's not what they're looking for their team, for their system, it may not work.
Well, you know, I think Dallas approaches it from the same standpoint that San Antonio does. And it's, do you fit the culture? We'll make you fit the
that
team,
works.
But do you fit the culture?
Completely right. Agree. I can
and
agree.
I think
yeah,
that's
I
why they get so much success with these guys who are, you know, veteran minimum guys or, you know, these one-year deal guys. I mean, I think that says a lot about the culture that they have in Dallas, which is why I'm always shocked that they don't get more free agents. I mean, you know, like, you would think that they could sign a guy like DeAndre Jordan.
Well, we got close enough. They got close enough to do that. Gosh.
Just had to bring that up, Coach.
By the way, we call him the center who should not be named. So
yes, the center who should not be named.
Here's a question for you guys.
Go ahead.
If DeAndre Jordan was available in a trade, would you want him?
No.
Okay. See, all right. So you can't take it personally. It's a business.
Yeah.
It's a business.
See, listen, I don't have a problem with him changing teams. I just didn't like the way he went about it. I can understand if you want to change your mind. I get that. That's not the problem. The problem I had was the way he went about it. The way he went about it was very, very high schoolish.
And
yeah, okay.
Yeah, well, sure. And if I look at it, if DeAndre Jordan was still on this team, Chandler Parsons would still be on his team, and his bad knees would still be on this team. Ugh. And so we'd have Chandler Parsons and DeAndre Jordan taking up, you know, the majority of our salary cap with bad knees and not being able to hit free throws.
You know what? Not signing Chandler Parsons to a max deal was the best move of the offseason for the Mavericks.
Yes, I completely agree.
True that. Don't you think Memphis loves what they're paying for? What is he averaging, like
6 points?
Six, 7 points?
I don't think that they're very happy about it.
No. And the Trailblazers were pretty happy about it, too, by the way.
True.
Oh,
trolling
yeah.
on Twitter.
Yeah, so...
Hey, they sent out a memo about that to the NBA.
Oh, really?
Yeah, employees in the NBA, that team accounts aren't allowed to, you know, troll like
oh,
players. Like
oh, come
that.
On.
Not allowed, but they just discourage it.
That's so it's such a bummer, man. Like, it's fun. And, it's all fun. I don't know, man. I like it when they troll the other team, not necessarily an individual player.
Yeah. Oh, I think the other
like,
team's thing, I think they love.
Great at it.
Yeah, and the Rockets account has had a couple times where they've, you know, trolled some people, but.
Yeah.
So, all right. So I can't let you go until we talk about some X's and O's. I am not an X's and O's person yet. This is not something that I've dove into. Didn't play organized basketball for very long. So, Coach Nick, what are the Mavericks running? What makes Carlisle such a good coach? And, you know, explain that all to us.
Coach Nick.
Did I just call you Coach Nick?
Fail.
You did call me Coach Nick. Oh, no.
By the way, Coach, real quick, along with Nick's question, can you give us a power ranking on where Carlisle fits and who are your top five coaches?
Ooh. Top five coaches.
Top five.
I'm not as high on Carlisle as a lot of people.
Stop.
Do you want to leave now?
Just, you know, I think that he costs them free agents, and I think that, like, he's able to relate to veteran players – in a way that he's not to younger guys, if that makes sense.
Yeah,
and I think
that
cost them in free agency. With that being said, on the court and his X's and O's and what he gets out of guys is amazing. Like, he can turn a freaking raisin back into a grape somehow, right? Like, he pieces this team together with duct tape and zip ties often. And it's impressive that they're fighting for an 8th seed right now when they looked all but dead while Dirk was out.
Yeah,
but I'll give more credit to Dirk than I will Carlisle for that, if that makes sense.
Ooh.
But so power rankings wise, I mean, Pop is the best coach in NBA history.
Yes, of course.
Hands
I
down.
Don't know about history. He's very
no,
good
in NBA history.
Who are you going to
be the best coach in NBA history? 20 years of 50 wins, man.
It's either him, Phil Jackson, or Red. Right? Is there anybody else that like
Pat Riley?
Stop.
Pat Riley? No.
Pat Riley's
no,
a top
not
coach.
Not only that, but
I mean, I still think the best coach. I still think the best coach is Phil Jackson.
Because Phil Jackson only coached one way.
Yep,
but it was the most effective way in the NBA history.
Uber flexible.
And Phil Jackson had two of the best, like four players ever.
They never won without him.
And Shaq.
They never won without him.
Still, it's a combination of it. But he had the best player in NBA history.
But they never won without him.
And he had.
Phil Jackson's the greatest ego manager in NBA history.
Agreed.
Until now. I'll give him that. But you know, like, he didn't invent the triangle.
He perfected
it. And that was the only way he coached.
Right.
Meanwhile, you know, how many different offensive philosophies has he employed in the, you know, 20 something years that he's been the head coach?
But is it fair to say that.
He also coached. What was that?
Is it fair to say that. That Phil Jackson perfected the triangle, though. He didn't invent it, but he perfected it.
No, I think Michael Jordan perfected it. Like, yeah. When you have Michael Jordan and Kobe Bryant, who are two high-efficiency mid-range players, and Kobe, for a large section of that, was pretty good in the mid-range. And then Shaq was just, you know, there's never been a human being like Shaq.
No, never. A human.
I think that it can cover up for some of the deficiencies of the triangle. Now, I love the triangle. I run the triangle with my teams. And, you know, every team in the NBA runs variations of the triangle. But I think that, you know, did we see the perfect version of the triangle? Like with the Bulls? Possibly.
Probably.
As far as the mid-range version. But you're seeing the perfect version of it now in Golden State. I mean, a lot of the stuff they run are triangle actions that just go into other things. Remember, they're number 30 in the league in pick and roll percentage. Like, they rarely run pick and rolls.
Oh, well. So wait, let's the rest of your list. So Pop, coaches, obviously number one.
Power ranking, top five.
Oh, Taman.
I'm gonna go. I'll go Pop. I'll go. Taman. Probably Steve Kerr. I really like the stuff that he does. I don't know, you know, how much of it is X and O's and how much of it is personality management.
Yeah.
But I know his X and O's are solid. I am a big fan of Mike D'Antoni. I think he's probably the most influential coach in NBA history. I mean, he changed the game.
Completely.
The game that we watch today is Mike D'Antoni basketball. Actually, I'll put him ahead of Steve Kerr. Man, what am I doing? I should have had this list ready. I think Carlisle is right behind those guys because of what he's able to eke out with like guys on minimum contracts and, you know, lack of talent. I mean, Devin Harris is still playing in the NBA somehow.
Still
like,
making
I
it happen.
I don't know how he does it. And then, I don't know. I tend to lean toward a guy like Jason Kidd, which probably sounds crazy. But if you watch some of the things that they do, they are very, very unique. They run a lot of their horns actions from the wing, which really utilizes Giannis's length. Like, I don't know. It's interesting to watch. I highly recommend watching a Bucks game and just watching how these guys operate out of the elbows.
Stan Van Gundy just got really mad at you.
Oh, yeah. Well, Stan's fine, but he's not like – I just don't think he's – I give a lot of credit for creativity.
Yeah.
You know, like, are you doing interesting things? I mean, again, like – this is one of my knocks on Phil is like, you know, you come down and you're running the triangle over and over and over again. I mean, they're obviously different plays or whatever, but there's no, I don't know, there's no motion week mixed in there. There's no, you know, you rarely see a horn set. And I like the guys, I tend to lean toward the guys that run a lot of different stuff because that's how I am, man. I just get bored if you do the same thing over and over and over again.
Agreed, and so hopefully next week we won't get into the team tank versus team playoffs debate because we've talked about it over and over again because that's just been the, you know, the hot button topic here in, you know, Mavericks country. So, Coach Dave, thanks so much for joining
us. Thanks
much,
Coach. You were great.
Thank you. Can't wait to come back on and talk about how they're a young point guard away from making the playoffs next year.
Let's have the same conversation that we had this year.
Actually, I think that they just need a dynamic player. Like if they could get Lowry Markkanen to be the new Dirk, I think that'd be fantastic. Malik Monk would be perfect for them.
Yeah, that'd be cool. I'm down with that.
Yeah. So,
I'm down to Monk.
I appreciate it, guys.
The Monk. Thanks much, Coach.
Thanks, you.
All right. Take care.
Okay, that was Coach Dave.
Yeah, it was.
There you go. Thanks so much for listening to the Mavs Fanatic podcast.
I just wanted to say one thing real quick.
Go ahead.
Who's your top five coaches of all time?
Top five.
Of all time.
Of all time? Yeah. Gosh, just put me on the spot.
I have mine.
It's probably Pop, Phil Jackson, and then, I don't know, I'm going to be missing somebody, but you look at, I don't know. I can't go like too far back. I can't go like Red Auerbach because
here's
guy played against like 12 teams.
Here's my five.
Go ahead.
Phil Jackson.
Okay.
Red Auerbach. No. Phil Jackson, Red Auerbach.
Okay.
Pat Riley. Greg Popovich. Chuck Daly.
Oh, I like Chuck Daly. That's a good one. The dream team coach.
Yeah.
I mean, they brought him in for a reason.
Yeah, that's my top five right there. I think top five right now. Who's your top five right now?
Right now, I'd have to go Pop.
All right.
Because I put him number one all time.
Well, yeah, I have him number one, too, for the record right now.
I might go Carlisle. I might go
Carlisle
Steve.
Too.
And then I'd probably go Steve Kerr. And then, man, you put me on the spot again. I did.
I like putting you on the spot.
You do, because it just makes me squirm, and then I'm just like, let me go over to a list of... This is excellent radio that I'm doing right now.
Yes, of course. While Nick looks for, as Nick attempts to,
I don't want to miss anybody. You know, I don't want to be like, how dare you miss this person? But what about a Brad Stevens? Let me go Brad Stevens.
I do like Brad.
Let me go Brad
Stevens.
Stevens.
He's a good
in
coach.
That spot.
I like Brad Stevens.
And then D'Antoni. I mean, D'Antoni's when he's got the talent. I mean, he tried in New York, it didn't work. He tried in LA, it didn't work. But the places that he's actually had talent, he's been really, really good. And there's just not any I mean, you're not going to put us Terry Stotts, Alvin Gentry, Dave Yeager, Tom Thibodeau. Tom Thibodeau's probably up there, but
overrated.
You can't say
overrated.
Okay, go ahead. Give me your spiel on Tom Thibodeau.
I don't dislike him. He's a great defensive coach, but is not the best offensive guy.
No. Steve Clifford's probably up there. Steve Clifford's done some good stuff with the Hornets.
No, he's not bad.
Stan Van Gundy is probably up there.
My top five is Pop.
Okay.
Carlisle.
At least you think Pop is the best active coach. I mean,
yes,
man.
Of course, absolutely. Yeah. I don't want to knock Pop. I think he's great, but to me, I don't want to put him at number one because we can't ignore whether we agree or disagree. I mean, we can make strong cases for guys like Phil Jackson, guys like Pat Riley. We can. That's just a fact. We literally can. But yeah, I have Pop, Carlisle. Number three and four is a little hard for me because I'm like in a mix between Steve Kerr and Eric Spoelstra. Those are my three and four.
Spoelstra.
I think Spoelstra's a really good coach.
I think he's a good coach.
I think he is. And a lot of people forget he did a pretty good job when it was just Wade. Wade, LeBron, and Bosh, they won championships.
Was he the coach then?
He was. He was. He was the coach in 2009 and in 2008, I believe. He's been a coach.
But not when they won, though.
Not when they won. He was assistant coach.
Yeah,
but
yeah.
He did a very good – I remember they won, 47 games, I think, with just Wade? They lost to Boston in the first round in 2010.
Yeah, that was the Wade, Lamar Odom, Brian Grant, Butler.
I thought he did a good job there. So I have them at 3 and 4. I'll probably – man, it's not a disrespect. You can pick both of them, but I'll pick Spoelstra at 3, Kerr at 4. But it's not a disrespect to Kerr. If somebody said Kerr, I'm cool with that too.
Okay, that's fair.
And number five, even though I think he's severely overrated, Doc Rivers. But I think he's severely overrated.
Oh, man. I think we've gone so many ways with Doc Rivers because there are people that are like, oh, he's an awful coach. I mean, look what he's done. And then there are people like, oh, it's Doc Rivers. He's obviously a great coach.
I don't think he's a bad coach, but I think that the championship surrounding Paul Pierce, Kevin Garnett, and Ray Allen definitely overrated him a bit.
And when you talk about Doc Rivers, you can't fail to mention what he did for the Clippers with that whole Donald Sterling thing.
Yeah, I mean, he handled it very well.
He basically coached and managed that entire franchise.
Right.
I mean, there's something to be said about leadership.
Yeah,
with
and
that
unexpectedly
situation.
Put on the spot too. Like he did a very good job, and I don't think he's a bad coach at all. I think the ring in 08 definitely put him in a place where I don't think he necessarily should be because I think a lot of coaches could have won with that Celtics team.
Yeah, right.
But
I mean, Kevin Garnett was basically coaching the defense himself.
Right. I mean, I'll put him at number five.
And
but
we see what Rondo has done with some coaches.
Right. Yeah, he kept Rondo at bay, which was kind of hard to do. I mean, I think Garnett and Pierce and Allen had a role in that. But I have him at number five. And I know I said top five, but number six, I have Brad Stevens.
Yeah. What do you think about Coach Bud? Budenholzer for Atlanta.
Yeah, Atlanta. He's good. I like him. I mean, he's a pop prodigy.
That 60-win team keeps looking more and more impressive.
Right.
when the pieces start going other places.
Right.
When Korver goes to Cleveland. When Jeff Teague is now in Indiana. And what are they doing? With
right.
Him?
No, I agree.
Al Horford go to It's like, yeah, man.
No,
he did a lot with
learned a lot under Pop.
Oh
which
yeah.
Which is very good. Very good. If there's somebody you want to learn from, it's definitely Greg Popovich.
Yeah, so there you go. We got into coaches somehow. I guess we should have known we would have been talking about coaches since we were having Coach Dave on.
True.
And, so, Coach Dave, sorry I called you Coach Nick.
Yeah, right?
it was going to happen.
I just got one last thing to say. On our next Mass Fanatic podcast, on our next guest, when they bring up Keeping Up with the Knicks, that is a brand new segment on the podcast. Keeping Up with the
Keeping
Knicks.
Keeping Up with the Knicks. There you go. We'll end on that note. Thanks so much for tuning in. If you guys subscribe on iTunes at Mavs Fanatic Podcast, you can follow both of us. Our handles are in the description.
Yes, it is.
So you can follow us. Also, keep up with MavsFanatic.com for all the stuff we got going on. We got articles going up all the time. We have pregame recaps going on all the time, every single game. We have Michael Lark taking awesome photos. We got good stuff coming up. So be checking out with that. Thanks so much for joining us.
Thanks much. Four, three, two, one.
And now, insurance-minded speeches from Geico.
It's a common expression, don't look a gift horse in the mouth. However, what if the horse's mouth is filled with useful insurance tools? This is the exact case with the Geico app. Yes, the app is free and therefore a gift horse. However, look inside the app and behold, emergency roadside assistance, digital ID cards, bill pay. Get the Geico app. Look it in the mouth. Get amazing services. Thank you.